This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Glad you're with us today. It is Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji until 1 o'clock. We are talking sports with you. The number is 314-436-7900. You can visit with us that way by calling or texting, leaving voice messages on the Odyssey app. That is an option for you as well. And we're streaming live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. We're on Twitter at KMOX Sports. So find us there. It is the Gas House Gang until 1, and Bernie Miklas is with me. And this is, I don't know that we were planning necessarily to talk about sports betting, but some major news from this morning. And an FBI investigation over the last several years has culminated in the arrests of NBA players and coaches Chauncey Billups, Terry Rozier, and Damon Jones. A total of about 31 individuals, in fact, 13 of them members of the mafia, in an investigation across 11 states found illegal gambling and sports rigging occurred. And some of this was also part of an underground poker scheme in which they would lure players in under the guise of getting to play poker alongside NBA stars like Chauncey Billups. And then there was this sophisticated way using technology that they would be able to read the cards of these victims and be able to transmit that information to players at the table. And they were able to steal millions from these players. So a long investigation, the FBI with a press conference earlier today. And Bernie, what a mess, man. This is just an incredible mess.
It's always been there. But the proliferation, I just think, is just so brazen now. And what intrigues me is, again, this has always existed. There's always been, you know, backroom stuff. There's always been suspicions. There's a lot of smart organizations or smart networks or whatever you want to call it that, you know, are really, really careful, and they kind of know how to do it in a way they're going to get away with it. But what I've never understood is, I'm not sure why, and this applies to some of these betting scandals in the 1940s, 1950s, and so on. I've never understood why people that literally work either play for a sports team or work for a sports team or have anything to do officially with a sports team, especially where you have named players, you have named personalities. I mean, they're not just anonymous people. Why they think that they're going to be able to get away with it when, you know, history tells us that it might take a while, but I can't sit here and say always, but most of the time, these entities that have some high profile people involved, especially, or playing for, you know, different basketball programs or whatever, they get smoked out and they get busted. I'm not sure why the next generation that tries this thinks that they're going to like get away with it and they don't have anything to worry about. It seems incredibly naive to me, but it is a problem because it's always been a problem. And I think now there's more exposure on it and there's more light on it and there's more people looking at it. And I'm surprised that maybe this one lasted as long as it did before they brought the hammer down. But maybe that was the point. Maybe they wanted to have a very, very, very thorough investigation just to make sure they had the evidence.
Well, I mean, if you're doing your due diligence, that's exactly what you need to do. And these are, at the moment, right, FBI allegations. Nothing is proven yet. There are going to be court cases. And, you know, the Terry Rozier's attorney, for example, released a statement saying that essentially that they knew there was an investigation ongoing. The NBA, they were aware, had cleared Rozier. So they're a little surprised by all of this happening. And, you know, I don't know what the end outcome for sure is going to be, Bernie, but I actually think this could end up being a good thing. First of all, sports betting is not going anywhere. The legalization of it is here. It's not going away. And it will probably continue to proliferate, as you mentioned. But the more eyeballs on it there are, the more regulation there is on it, the lot more difficult, the more difficulty there will be in pulling off stuff like this. And one of the things Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, said today was, or had said in an interview with Pat McAfee earlier in the week, is that they're just going to have to do something about player props, for example. So they'll have to make sure they regulate that a whole lot better so that you don't have guys pretending to have an injury 9 minutes into the game because they've hit 6 points, but their player prop total was like 8 points. So they're out of the game, and therefore they can't reach that total, and therefore they are rigging the prop bet for that night. So there are ways to regulate that. They're going to have to do it. And these guys are going to have to be punished. If all of this ends up being true and proven, they will have to be punished. And I hope they are, because you can't, you cannot have this stuff. It's one thing, like the Black Sox scandal over 100 years ago. Those guys were getting paid nothing to play those games. Nothing compared to what players get today. So I kind of understand it. Back then, I do not understand it now. I'm in total agreement with you on that.
I would say this, though. I have been impressed by the fact that the legal gambling entities, whether we're talking about sports books, whether we're talking about casinos, I have been pleasantly surprised that when the proliferation of legalized gambling, you know, came into the culture more and more and more and more, there have been so many instances of, you know, where we know that legal sports books and we know that casinos, things like that, where they've got the people that run those places, they have all kinds of eyeballs on everything, and they sniff out stuff at a much higher rate than I thought they would. Like, for example, the two Cleveland Guardians pitchers who are suspended, and they're probably in deep, deep trouble, all because the suspicion is because of these prop bets. It's like, well, you know, all right, you make a bet, the first pitch is going to be strike one or ball one. And they noticed some suspicious activity, suspicious betting patterns on this, where it escalated. And then they started looking around at, like, who were the object of the bets? This pitcher, that pitcher. Is it going to be ball one or is it going to be strike one? Lay your money down. And they ferreted it out really quickly. I mean, and those two Cleveland Guardians pitchers are in deep, deep, deep trouble. We're never going to see them in the major leagues again. And there have been other examples of this where they, the sports books, the casinos, they're really good at detecting unusual betting activity that is basically a red flag, and they get on it right away. So my point is, I'm not suggesting they're infallible. But I am saying, I know, based on all the news stories I've read about this, the antenna is up. I mean, they are much more onto this stuff than I would have imagined they would be this soon. They really detect stuff and then react to it and jump on it. So I like that part of it.
And I like the fact that it is out in the open. Now, what was happening here with these gambling rings, with the poker ring that was going on, this was all underground stuff. This was not these players placing a bunch of bets on DraftKings or BetMGM or any of these other apps. This wasn't being done legally. They were doing this stuff illegally, which is what almost all of these scandals have been. Going back through history, all of these gambling scandals, like what Tim Donaghy, the NBA official, was doing from the mid-90s all the way through the mid, 2007? I think was the last year he was, participating in this gambling stuff. All that stuff is being done illegally on not legal platforms. You know, so I like that there's more light on this. Because sports betting is not going away, the more light that is shown on these things, the less likely it is that stuff like this is going to happen. So what needs to happen next is there needs to be an example made of all of these people so that the fear of God is put into all of these players and coaches, that they think twice about doing some of this stuff, even if the mafia is involved. Well, and I know one part of that, Bernie, I'll just mention this real quick. And one part of the FBI investigation mentioned Jontay Porter, who said he was threatened because of gambling debts. He was threatened to partake in this poker ring.
Right. And I was going to mention him, so I'm glad you brought him up. Yep. And I think I appreciate the fact that you're pointing out the difference between legal gambling and underground gambling, because there is a huge difference, and which also gets back to my point that I think legalized gambling with the casinos, the sports book, they spent a lot of money on monitoring betting activity so they can jump in and intervene and detect the trend and sniff it out and then get law enforcement involved. They put the legalized services put a lot of money into doing whatever they can to prevent this from happening. And even if it happens, jumping on it quickly to stop it. So I think you nailed it though. We got to make sure we just differentiate between the two. I mean, the underworld is a hell of a lot different than legalized services.
Right.
I kind of laugh in a way I shouldn't at, you know, these people that are got stars in their eyes and it's like, oh, there's going to be some pro athletes there playing poker with me. Oh yeah. Let me go. Oh, this will be unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you talk about what's the words, pigeons or
lemmings
or,
but what? I think they were calling them fish. So
they are fish. That's the word. Yeah.
They were calling them fish because they were being reeled in, real suckers that were getting reeled into these poker games, thinking, like you said, oh, I'm going to get to play poker next to Chauncey Billups. And they were using really high tech means of being able to read the cards. They were using actual technology to know what the poker hands were of these fish and then able to take advantage of them for millions of dollars. And I would just say, full disclosure, people have heard me talk about FanDuel sure. on this show, and I will continue to endorse them. I think that overall, legalized sports betting and the sports apps, it's a lot of fun, and the vast majority of people are doing this responsibly, and you have to continue to do it responsibly. But I think that I'm going to need some evidence that right. none of this stuff that's been going on in these investigations, I need some evidence that none of this would have happened had sports betting not been legal in the country. Because, you know, it's not the legal markets that members of the mafia are trying to manipulate.
Yeah, I agree. And listen, like you, my friend, I out of respect to your sponsor, I won't mention my sponsor, but over at STL Sports Central, I have a major sponsor of my videos, which is a legal sports book. And I have no problem, never will have a problem of informing the public, hey, it opens December 1st, and this is what you should do to get ready and all that stuff. The same kind of spots that you do. And I've had people try to kind of, you know, shame me or something. Why? It's legal. And first of all, I've always said this. If it's legal, no one, and I mean absolutely no one, is going to tell me what I should do with my money in the privacy of my own home in a legal manner. And it's up to each individual to make these wagers responsibly and to check themselves and to make sure that things don't get out of hand, because that's part of life. This always happens as well, you know, in some cases. So, but this idea, we live in this culture where states have lotteries, where there's all kinds of gambling activity going on legally in states all across America long before the legal sports books opened. But then you have all the church ladies coming out of the woodwork talking about the evil of legal sports books. Well, what the hell do you think the state lottery is?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the hypocrisy when we're talking about the legal stuff.
Right.
I am like so repelled and disgusted by the hypocrisy that no one lecture me about what I should do. If I want to make a legal bet, I'll make a legal bet. Thank you.
Well, this is about personal responsibility, people.
Right.
And you can develop a gambling problem. And if you do, there are phone numbers for it, like 1-800-GAMBLER. There are resources, just like any other sort of addiction, whether it's alcohol or
sure.
drugs. There are resources for it. This is where personal responsibility comes in. You have to take responsibility for yourself. And whatever your vice is, whether it is gambling or drugs or booze or food, sugar, whatever it is, things that can end up hurting you, you have to take responsibility for yourself. And we can't be one of those societies where we talk about personal responsibility and then say, well, you shouldn't have gambling because it's bad for society. Well, I mean, which one is it? It's one of the two. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji here on the Gas House Gang. You can give us your thoughts. at 314-436-7900. Bernie on the show, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. It's the Gas House Gang. We will talk to Howard Richards talking Mizzou football at 12:30 on 104.1 FM KMOX. Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji on KMOX. Every weekday, the Gas House Gang happens from noon until 1 o'clock here. And the World Series, Bernie, is going to start on Friday. And my God, didn't these LCS games end like 2 weeks ago? Doesn't it feel like there's just way too much time between the LCS, which Game 7 happened on Monday, and here we're waiting 3 days in between. I know that Thursday night football is happening tonight. I know that MLB prefer not to go up against the NFL if they don't have to. But still, man, don't you want to get these series started quicker?
Well, I mean, yes and no. And I know that you say, well, that's not an answer. And you're right, it's not. But I'll explain what I mean. Listen, I think number one, they have to build a little extra time in case there's rainouts. And by the way, they can't anticipate that a team in a dome stadium is going to be in one of the LCS or series. You know what I'm saying? So they have to bake in a little extra time based on unexpected events. But the other thing I like about having a few days is that it gives us a chance to see both teams at their best. In other words,
both
managers in this World Series can set up their pitching the way they want. Instead of like from game one, it's like the very beginning of the World Series, you're scrambling. Oh, that guy can't pitch because we used him yesterday. This guy can't pitch. He went four innings 2 days ago. Everyone's had a chance. The pitching, I'm primarily talking about the pitching, but also maybe the hitters that are banged up. Both managers can set up the pitching exactly how they want to set it up. And I like that because that means you're going to see the best plans and the best players in action. It doesn't mean that it's going to work out well for one of the teams, but I'd rather see teams be able to use their best players, especially starting pitchers.
Now, I do agree with that. I feel like 2 days is a perfect amount of time for that. Three feels like a long time, and I would not want them going up against. Did we lose Bernie here? I don't think we are completely in disagreement on this because I do like a little bit of built up time off in between. So a couple of days for me feels about right. I just don't like the momentum that's lost in waiting 3 days for this. Though I guess the argument, counter argument is, well, the Super Bowl, that happens 2 weeks after the conference championship games, and there's no momentum lost. But again, it is just one game they play.
And I'm one of these people, it's like I have so many different sporting events I like to watch, and a lot of them I watch whenever I want to watch them. I don't watch them in real time. And so I don't know. I'm okay with it. I understand why you're perturbed, but I'm okay with it myself. You know why? Because there's so many things in pro sports especially that would drive me crazy if I let it drive me crazy. I just roll with it.
I'm always perturbed. You know this.
That's okay. I like it. It's one of the things I like about you. Yeah, like I'm the bluebird of happiness. Right? I never complain about anything,
I love the fact that between the two of us, I'm the crank. I love it.
Yeah. On this you are. Yeah.
That's great.
On this you are.
Well, we're going to do a little Thursday football here on the Gas House Gang, Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji. It's good to have you with us today. And it is time to go to the guest line as we talk to Howard Richards, getting ready for the Missouri Tigers game against Vanderbilt this weekend. Another top 15 matchup is happening, and this will actually be an ESPN Game Day featured location as the Tigers are getting ready to go up against a very big matchup, and it's a big game for both sides here. So let's first welcome in Howard Richards. Good to talk to you, Howard. How are you?
Hey, Chris, how are you? And first of all, I have to apologize for not being able to jump on with you guys yesterday. We ran a little bit over. But also, I have to tell Bernie that I really miss our Mondays on 590. And yeah. We got to figure out a way to do those again, man. You were very good. And I'm just all discombobulated and off schedule because I don't get to talk to you as much as I used to.
I know that's the one thing about the radio business, because all of us through the years will go, you know, we will have multiple jobs. And so sometimes you have these lasting connections. You do these segments and then they end and then you don't stay in touch. I'm really bad about staying in touch, Howard. And you're much better about that than I am. So, I love you and it's great to talk to you again. Thank you.
Likewise, my friend.
And you guys can do that all you want, but you can't do it on 590. You're going to have to do it here, I think. So before we get into the game coming up Saturday, which is a huge game, as I mentioned, that win over Auburn, as you've had now a few days to digest it, what did you take away from it?
Chris, when I go back and look at the video, I just really get frustrated because Missouri left so much on the table, and it's great that you came away from a difficult place in Auburn with a win, but there were just too many instances where the offense just didn't finish. I don't know what it was. It's like they had ate some bad food, but too many plays where the opportunities were there. It was less about Auburn, which has a really, really good defense. You know, maybe between Auburn and Oklahoma, maybe the two best defensive lines that Missouri will face all year. But it was less about what Auburn was doing and more about what Missouri wasn't doing. And again, just too many opportunities missed. One guy misses a block or just has a bad technique, which did not enable running backs, Ahmad Hardy and Jamal Roberts, to hit the holes where they needed to. Too much penetration. So those things have to be fixed. And I think Eli addressed them in his post-game press conference and also his weekly press conference on Tuesday. Those areas that they've got to be better at. Because if you do those things, you're going to enable the quarterback, Bo Prabula, to see the field better. He won't have to rush his throws. The first interception he threw on Saturday night was because he was off his back foot because of the rush, and he couldn't step into the throw and make a better throw. It was thrown slightly behind the receiver, which made it easier for the defensive back to make that interception. And he did make a good play on the ball. But these are things that if you get them fixed, Mizzou can play better offensively, which means they're going to stay on the field longer, they're going to extend drives, and play keep away from the other team's offense.
Howard, I wanted to follow up on that. You know, as a Mizzou fan, the one thing that concerns me is this, and it's hardly incredible point to make because I think it's pretty obvious. When Mizzou goes up against teams that have done a better job against the run, and we've seen that a couple times in recent weeks, Alabama and Auburn especially, I like Bo Prabula. I want to like really love Bo Prabula, but it seems to me that if Mizzou is getting their run game stymied, they simply don't have a reliable enough drop back passing game to where that can carry the team. Now, I'm not saying Bo can't make some plays out of that, but I'm talking about the consistency. I'm talking about doing it without interceptions and turnovers. I think that's a real concern going forward. And for me as a Mizzou fan, that's a concern for Saturday.
I have the same concern, Bernie, but I really do believe that it starts up front. Again, because of throws that have to be rushed by Beulah, he's making those mistakes. Now, he can't anticipate a lot of those because he hasn't seen these looks. We have to remind our listeners, this is his first full season as a starting quarterback. So he saw things against Auburn and against Alabama that he hadn't seen before. Where Missouri has to be better is the blocking has to be better. Guys have to finish up front. Technique has to be better. You work on that in practice, it's going to carry over into the games. But by the same token, I think you can, if you utilize more, at least initially in the game, more short passes to get guys open more quickly, I think it makes it easier for him to get in rhythm, to make those quick throws. They were open. There were a lot of opportunities open early for him that he just didn't see because of the rush. But if he can focus on, you know, hey, let's look at the tight end because he's open a lot. Big Brett Norfleet has to be able to use his big body to create more separation, and he has the ability to do that. There was a play, I don't know if you guys remember this, where second quarter, Urbula hits a defender in the back of the head. Now, the problem was he's throwing into double coverage. Was at the sideline, the right sideline. But over the middle, I could see Norfleet open by a half a step. Now, if he slows down on that play, if he continues running, he's wide open in the middle of the field. So that's where the progressions have to be better. He, again, seeing the field better, they got to coach him up a little bit better. But he's also got to do the homework himself and understand where the options are on every particular play. That comes with experience. And, you know, he's got to play more games, and hopefully it'll come to him. But I think he's a smart kid. He has a short memory. He doesn't let interceptions slow him down. He's got, you know, he's got to be able to, as a quarterback, you got to be able to flush those mistakes and move on because you'll have opportunities ahead of you.
Certainly the team is not going to look past their opponent this week because it is such a big game against Vanderbilt. But two games in a row now and three of the last four, they're going to go up against quarterbacks that are, you know, top five favorites to win the Heisman this year. You've got Diego Pavia for Vanderbilt this weekend. They will have Texas A&M and Marcel Reed 2 weeks from then after the bye week. And then they already played against Ty Simpson with Alabama. I mean, this is a lot of very good quarterback play they're going up against in a very short stretch.
Absolutely. And Diego Pavia from Vanderbilt presents a different type of challenge than, let's just say, Ty Simpson did with Alabama. I mean, Ty Simpson, really good pocket passer, but one that can also run it. Really good accuracy. Pavia, the accuracy isn't quite where Simpson's was, although, you know, they don't throw as many deep balls, a lot more short controlled passing. But what Pavia prevents challenges is that he's so good at improvising and running the football. He sees openings that a lot of quarterbacks don't do, and he's not afraid to tuck it and run it. So the issue with the Missouri defense is, or the challenge, I should say, they have to be far more disciplined in how they rush the passer. You've got to be so much more under control as you're coming upfield. You got to sort of fence him or cage him in. But you really need a strong presence, a strong push up the middle from your defensive tackles. And whether you're doing that with strictly from the defensive tackles or utilizing some blitzes, you've got to be effective in being able to affect what Pavia does. And there has to be someone spying him as well. It probably won't be the same guy every time because he can pick up on that. So it'll be the responsibility of multiple players to keep eyes on him. But if you're going to be effective against Pavia in this offense, you've got to be able to do that with the pass rush. But you've also have to be able to control the line of scrimmage in their running game. The thing about Vanderbilt is that in just 1 year, because of the offensive linemen that they've brought in through the transfer portal, they have improved from near the bottom of the 130 or so FBS teams in improving yards before contact. They've gone from like 129, 130 to number one. And that's a direct result of the quality of the linemen that they've brought in. So it's going to be a big challenge. They can run the football. They can control the clock, too. And you just got to be more disruptive as a defensive lineman. You've got to get extension to disallow offensive linemen from Vandy to occupy your bodies. You got to shed those blockers. You got to get into those gaps. If you can do that consistently, you'll have a much better time trying to defend Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I think to dovetail on your point, Howard, I was looking at my numbers, and you know, with Young and Wilson, those edge rushers that Mizzou has, they're second and third in the SEC in most pressures, and Mizzou's pressure rate as a team, as a defense, is like third best in the country. The one thing about Vandy, and I got, man, I got a lot of love for Vandy. They're great. But they're ranked 104th in the nation in pass pro, and their two starting offensive tackles in particular, when I was looking at where they're graded individually, I mean, they are way down the list. I mean, way down the list. Boy, the fantasy for a Mizzou fan is that those two edge rushers and others will just get after it and just win those battles against those tackles. And Mizzou should be able to just have a lot of havoc plays if that happens.
You're totally right. And this is the strength of the Missouri defense, is what Zion Young and Damon Wilson are able to do. And, of course, the backups, when they get an opportunity, Langdon Kitchen and Darius Smith, along with when they choose to blitz. So getting those tackles, those offensive tackles, turned from Vanderbilt, you saw it a lot last week against Auburn. Mizzou had a great success doing so. Again, if you can do that, then, well, you're going to make it more difficult for Pavia and that offense to, you know, really feel comfortable in throwing the ball downfield.
So last thing for you, Howard, this is a very big game. We've said it about a million times, and maybe it's a little too early to start thinking about, you know, the playoffs, but that is a goal for this Mizzou team, to make it into the playoff. How big is this game and the implications of it for that? Is it that important that you feel like they do need to win it?
I certainly do, especially being on the road. And winning on the road is what's going to create those style points from those that are on the playoff committee and looking at your complete body of work. Certainly, you know, winning 5 out of 6 games at home, and playing Alabama close, you know, losing only by 3 points, doesn't hurt Missouri. But winning those games that you can win in tough environments really helps your cause. But you mentioned looking ahead, and I don't think that this is what this team would likely do. They know that in order to, you know, be successful down the road, you've got to take each game and go 1-0 every week. And with the magnitude of this game, Missouri knows Vanderbilt very well. They've faced Diego Pavia 3 times in a row, you know, twice at Vandy, or this week will be twice, and of course when he was at New Mexico State. And it's no surprise what he's been able to do, but how do you defend him? That's the thing. You haven't been as disciplined in the past, but you have to do so this week. This is a big game. And maybe, you know, every week that Missouri wins, it seems that the next game is always the biggest game. But, you know, Drink has done, I think, a masterful job in positioning this team to where it is, to keep eyes on Missouri, but also continuing to build the brand of Missouri football. But you do it brick by brick, week by week, one game at a time, going 1-0, just keeping the focus on where you are this week and not looking so far ahead.
Howard Richards, Mizzou football analyst. We appreciate talking Mizzou football with you. Thank you for talking with us today.
Always a pleasure, guys. Talk to you soon.
Hey, Pally.
And again, that game against Vanderbilt, number 15, Mizzou, number 10, Vandy, will be at 2:30 on Saturday. Fighting Illini, they got a tough game, too. They're in Washington. The Huskies are 5-2 on the season. Fighting Illini are 23rd in the country. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji here on the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. Just a little bit more to go as we are with you until 1 o'clock today. Oh, that's my fault. I stepped all over Matt Pajeski and Jim Montgomery. You know, I'm such an idiot. Yeah, you know what, Matt? I'm ready now.
Practice wasn't great.
Why not?
You want to know the real reason, or you want to know a politically correct reason? Politically correct reason is we get happy after we win hockey games, and we don't practice the right way.
The real reason?
I'm not telling.
Well, we hope that Jim Montgomery and the Blues are practicing a little bit better, because they do have a game tonight against the Mammoth, the Utah Mammoth, which, by the way, I love. I love that mascot. Bernie Miklas is with me, Chris Ranji. Bernie, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. So that was from earlier in the week, Bernie, and Montgomery really not happy with the way his team is practicing. And so obviously it's somewhat on him, a lot on him to get his team to practice better. And now we hope that they are doing it because this game is happening tonight at Enterprise Center.
Yeah, they need to pick up the pace. They're top six in terms of their forward lines. Very disappointing. They're also the big offseason trade to bring in, you know, trade Balduke for this young defenseman, Logan Malou. You know, that hasn't worked out so far. And I said so far because it's so early in the season. And I think even the Blues advertise Malou as someone who's got great potential and will grow into what they think he'll grow into what they believe he'll be. But that said, you know, they're wearing out their top four defensemen. They're playing them way too much. There's a lack of urgency that I really don't understand. And I don't think there's any justifiable reason for it. Now that said, if you notice like a little irritation in my voice, it's not because you asked me the question, but it's like, I was just hoping we could get to maybe Thanksgiving before, you know, everything's a crisis. Every time they lose, it's a crisis, you know, and, you know, Montgomery is, you know, doing the stuff, which he should. He's talking about they got to hold each other accountable. The players got to hold each other accountable. Coaches have to hold them accountable. Players have to hold us, the coaches, accountable. And it's just the proverbial broken record over and over and over again. And the season is still basically forming. And yeah, you don't want to have these bad habits. I get it. But gosh, could we just get through like a month and a half of the season before this this constant like manufactured soap opera kicks in?
No, you know? I agree with you. And I tell you what, though, I actually kind of appreciate that Montgomery's going about it the way he is before the season gets out of hand. Before it gets before it gets away from the team, you know, stay on top of it. Be angry now. Just a handful of games into the season, but I am okay with that, and I hope it leads to some results. Oscar Sundquist coming back tonight, by the way.
That'll help.
Yeah, so he is coming back against Utah, which is very good news. Blues play the Mammoth tonight. Bernie Miklas, love it. I know you're back on Rush Hour Sports tomorrow, and then we will talk to you on the Gas House Gang on Tuesday.
Looking forward to it, Ron. Until then.
See you, buddy.
Be good.
That is good, man. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji, the Gas House Gang. If you missed anything, you know where to find it on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Just search for Gas House Gang. YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter as well. The Dave Glover Show is coming up next. We'll be back tomorrow with you at noon. Matt Pauly and me, Chris Ronji, Gas House Gang on KMOX.